26th. Thank you. It's 20 minutes after 1 on the 26th of January. This meeting of the House Judiciary Committee is called to order. Present are Representatives Gruenberg, Ellis, and Martin, and Representative Davis is also with us and will join us in just a moment. The other members are on their way. Today, we're going to do a brief overview of an issue which has come before the committee in the context of the Department of Public Safety and has come to many of you in the context of Department of Transportation. In the broadest sense of the phrase, we're going to take a look at jurisdictional issues between the state and municipalities with regard to public services. For the benefit of the people taping, I especially request if we could try to minimize noise from the crowd. Speaking first, I think we need to get the Department of Community and Regional Affairs to come to the table. Is there a representative of that department? Yes, sir, would you join? Would you state your name for the record, please?
I'm Peter Freer from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Freer. We've asked you to join us today to outline to the committee the nature of the jurisdictional issues described. I'd like to just give you a couple of examples which are not being given with the intent of focusing particularly on those examples, but just to make it clear to yourself and the audience, what members of the committee, what we're speaking of when we refer to jurisdictional questions. One that has come up in the past and which today seemed to be less of a problem than it had been in the past was the issue of jail facilities, for example, and you don't need to discuss the example, but just for your reference. For example, some cities operate jails where state prisoners are held for temporary periods of time, and fees are paid to those municipalities. And the question of whose responsibility is the fiscal responsibility there has come up. There's the opposite example of state facilities used to house folks who have been arrested on municipal charges. And once again, the question of who really has the burden to serve those functions has arisen. A couple of other examples that might be useful to you are the issue of police protection up in Anchorage. And we'd like you to give us in some detail information on the municipal law implications of that specifically. And I'll defer to you and Anchorage members to help clarify my language in the Department of Public Safety. But essentially, Anchorage apparently has service areas, and within certain service areas, municipal powers of different types are exercised. And in other areas, certain powers are not exercised. And the one that came to our attention was police protection. My question to you would be, in a municipality which exercises police powers, what is the status of the responsibility of that municipality to exercise throughout its city limits? Another example that has come up is with Department of Transportation. Some people have raised the issue that they cannot get a particular road on the state highway system. At the same time, the Department of Transportation is maintaining and plowing dead-end roads within the city limits of specific municipalities. I have some backup material that gives some examples of that, but I think the examples are less important than the basic question of, under what context do municipalities take responsibility for road maintenance within their limits? And in what context does the state take that responsibility? That issue, of course, once it is summarized here at this committee, is going to be referred to the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. But we are trying to frame the general jurisdictional issues prior to suggesting that they take a look at the issue. So that's pretty much what we're about today. And if you would care to, either using the police protection example or the DOT example or both, give us a little bit of your insight on where jurisdictional overlaps are occurring, and if you would like, what the department thinks about.
Thank you for the opportunity to comment, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'd like to say that the department hasn't established a formal position on such a jurisdictional question, so that my role here today will be in the capacity, I suppose, of a technical advisor or something of that nature. Regarding the municipal provision of police services, I think you'll find that it will vary from municipality to municipality around the state. I'm speaking of boroughs here, based on the form of government which the borough has. whether or not there are cities within the borough and so on. Let's just give some examples. In Sitka, for example, it's a unified home rule municipality. There's one government. Police services are provided in Sitka as an area-wide police service, so there is no jurisdictional dispute between troopers and local police services. If you go to other areas in the state, most boroughs in the state are second class, and many of those boroughs have within their limits first class and home rule cities. Well, second class boroughs, they're not. If you look in Title 29 under authorities which can be assumed by boroughs, second class boroughs can assume the authority to provide police services, but it's not named. It's under that title. It says any other authority not forbidden by law. So what you find, I went through and I listed the boroughs, and for example, in Ketchikan, you have a second class borough. Within Ketchikan is a home rule city. So you find that the home rule city provides the police services, and the troopers then provide services outside of the city limits, and borough residents are not taxed with the provision of police services. Here in Juneau, it's somewhat of a unique situation, and we're sort of midway between, I think the service areas for police service still exist, am I correct, Damon?
To some extent, the troopers
Can you identify the person you're asking?
I'm sorry,
can you identify yourself for the record if you're going to answer?
Kevin Ritchie, city manager of Juneau.
Thank you, Mr. Ritchie. And would you restate your comment, please?
Basically, the city and borough provides police protection to almost the entire city and borough, and the troopers have a very small presence in the rural areas outside our basic urban area. The greatest extent of their responsibility lies on the north side of the Menahal River, basically out through Rock Bay, Wind Canal, those areas.
Thank you.
So I guess the nutshell answer here is that the provision of police services is, because most boroughs are second class, most police service occurs within cities within boroughs, and area-wide police services within boroughs is the exception rather than the rule. And that has to do, because we only have three unified home rule municipalities in the state, and that's Juneau, Anchorage, and Sitka.
And what about within cities? I hear what you say about boroughs, but let's take the city of, just for example, Haines, Anchorage. Pick your own city.
I'm not personally familiar with every instance, but it's most common for the provision of police services to occur within the cities.
And it's most common for them to be area-wide?
Well, for cities, not for boroughs.
Yes, for cities. Now, under what circumstances might police services in cities not be area-wide?
Well, that's hard to answer without knowing some of the background facts that, or some of the basis for the decisions that were made to create service areas years ago. I would have to make an assumption that service areas were created because there were sufficient population differentials to warrant a higher level of service in one area and a higher level of taxation to support that than in other areas that perhaps were more rural or could not justify or warrant what we might call an urban level of service.
Okay, well, Mr. Freer, I'll be pursuing that question with you in a moment. Mr. Martin had a
question. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would be reading the Constitution Provision, Article 10 of local government, and it's been a problem since day one, since I've been down here, that we constantly had demand by local governments, and either the divided up into service areas, and that covers here what shall be done and how they should be doing. But it seems to me that your agency should be constantly reevaluating Article 10. And perhaps the reason why we have not done what the article said is that all geographical areas will be divided up into boroughs or city. And here are the responsibilities. And there's a lot of area, and I keep on thinking of the Toke Delta area, because a couple of years ago we got a dumb argument that they demanded $10,000 for a Little Lick field. Nothing, we do those things ourselves. Well, they refused to incorporate. I think they've lost at least three times local election to incorporate, and the main reason why? Well, we can get the money from the state. Well, why? Because it says the Constitution, all areas will be incorporated. And somehow, ever we've as legislators or as departments or whatever, have refused to follow what the Constitution said before we had money. It does describe that you can have your service areas, will have your different levels of government as people vote for it, or as local assemblies decide in assembly areas. But we're getting, as you say, Mr. Chairman, that certain areas, like in Anchorage, my area, I guess since day one, always had police and fire protection, and we always paid for it, even though we were paying for other areas. The other area, the town said, we ain't going to pay for it, but we want it. My area pays the bill, or they get the state to pay for it. So my question is that, is the department going back once in a while, looking at the provision in the Constitution and saying, are we following it? Should we do something? Should we force these local areas to incorporate?
Well, the department has prepared, under the direction of the Local Boundary Commission, the department has prepared a regional government study that generally examines the formation of boroughs when one currently exists. And we're also engaged in the preparation of feasibility studies for forming boroughs, and it's either 11 or 13 different regions around the state. Mm. So yes, an examination of maybe of the policy implications of that hasn't occurred, but there is an examination going on right now of the feasibility of forming regional governments around the state. And those reports are being provided, to my knowledge, to the legislature as they're being published.
Other comments, Mr. Martin?
No.
Other questions from members? Mr. Furr, my question has nothing at all to do with boroughs or regional governments. It has to do with within existing cities. My concern is to understand personally what the department feels about the utilization. You often, as a department, are very vocal with regard to the consolidation of governmental entities and trying to avoid what you call a patchwork of service areas. And this has been department testimony almost. That phrase is a department buzzword, and I hear it all the time. Now, what is the premise here in terms of the police issue, before we get to the DOT, is to what extent should police powers, in the view of the department, be consistently applied throughout the city limits, unless, of course, there's no road or something like that? And to what extent should police powers be variable in different neighborhoods? I would assume that the department has given some thought to this, and I'd appreciate hearing what those thoughts are.
I don't come prepared to speak with the department on that particular question, Mr. Chairman.
Well, all right, then maybe over the next half hour you could make some phone calls and see whether you could develop some departmental thinking for us, because the purpose of having the Department of Community and Regional Affairs here is to try to determine whether there's a statewide approach to this question. The issue brought up by Mr. Martin in Anchorage, or the issue that I might bring up in another community, are just examples, but it appears that there is an opportunity for taking what appears to me to be a power that should be exercised citywide and segmenting it out. And I would like to know whether the department has any thoughts on that.
I'd be happy to.
Thank you, Mr. Burr. Appreciate it. Any other questions, Mr. Burr? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Why don't we... would you like to pursue the police issue further and request comments of Anchorage before we move to DOT? Is there anybody here from the city of Anchorage who wishes to make comment, or the Municipal League, or anyone else who feels they've got a vested interest in this issue from the municipal perspective? If not, Mr. Ritchie, do you wish to speak?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, only to answer questions if you wish.
Mr. Martin?
Yes, I don't know if Mr. Chairman, Mr. McVicky was here at the time, but I think you were when we did have the problem 3 or 4 years ago disputing to what degree should the city of Juneau and the municipality of Juneau have state trooper protection when your own people refuse local police protection. And how you solved that problem is my understanding now that it's all police protection.
Yes.
Can you give an idea of how you solved that and how the people responded?
Sure. Happened in 1986. Basically, we got a letter of intent from the Commissioner of Public Safety saying, basically laying out the rationale of the legislature at that time and telling us basically to assume local responsibility for police protection. We did it essentially in two phases. The final effect of that is we just about doubled our patrol staff from about 13 to about 26 officers. We increased dispatch from about 10 to 11, and then we kept our administrative effort about the same. So we basically increased the department budget from about $2.5 million to around $4 million, or an increase of about $1.5 million to assume responsibility for police essentially area-wide. At this point, Juneau being a city and a borough, The troopers still have a minimal responsibility. I believe they may have 4 or 5 officers that provide nominal patrol to our more rural areas of the city.
Once it was over with, how does the city, the people respond? Do they like the protection better? Are they happier?
We made a great effort in terms of public relations, and it was accepted quite well. We didn't have a storm of protest. It was not carried out under a vote. It was a decision of the assembly to do this phase, but there was quite a bit of publicity surrounding it, and we didn't have a particularly bad reaction. And I think that people accept the area-wide police concept throughout the city of Borough quite well at this point.
Any questions, Mr. Davis?
I don't really have a question, Mr. Ritchie, but I think the example of what happened in Juneau is a good one, and I represent an area that people are served by troopers, and that's, the same people that are telling me to cut the budget are the ones that are served by troopers, and it's just outside the municipality of Fairbanks. So I think there's certainly, you should be commended for the work that they've done in terms of selling it to the people, and I think the delivery of services is real immediate. They cut the budget to the city, what's going to happen? It translates into reduced services. But, the people have done a good job down here. I think there'll probably be some people following you in the future. Thanks.
Thank you. Further questions, Mr. Richard? Any comments you'd like to make, sir, before?
No, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Burgess, did you wish to comment before we hear from Public Safety?
I don't move it. Mr. Chairman, Scott Burgess with the Alaska Municipal League, just to let you know that we're here and certainly interested and looked at what was printed in terms of the debate and saw it narrowly focused on police and certainly of interest. I know of the specific situation that, that sort of raises this issue, and I think you've seen an example in one case of similar municipalities where you have a unified home rule municipality. The Juneau case versus the Anchorage case, and presumably you're going to hear the testimony from Anchorage. I wouldn't think that you want to paint the rest of the state in that, given those two examples, because as Mr. Furr indicated, they vary drastically. I applaud the committee in terms of dealing with this issue. It is not an easy one and certainly not limited to police powers. It's something that the league has been pushing for a number of years. I think the real issue is, what are the basic services? Who should provide them? What level they should be provided? What the revenue source is going to be? Who's going to collect the revenue? And how is it going to be distributed, again, depending on those decisions? It's a humongous debate. It's being piecemealed at the time. We raised the road issue. That was something the governor sort of instigated 2 years ago, and they tried to do some work. There's a task force. I assume the committee, if they don't have it, I certainly can provide it if DOT can't provide it, where they went through a study and looked at, quote, the transfer responsibility issue. And that information, I think, would be useful. It was really dealing with the maintenance issue and revenue sources. And it was, even that single issue was not an easy one to deal with. So we certainly will participate to the degree. I don't know if there are specific questions you have, but we're interested. I think it's also apropos given the discussions as far as budgets, which is certainly here and running around, and I think has been praised. When you're dealing with municipalities, which are creatures of the state, they're basically your administrative units out there across the state, and the question is, where can the services be provided most efficiently and effectively? And if the state pulls out and pushes the burden too much, there's an incentive there to disincorporate, and therefore the state ends up with a worse situation because it may not be sufficient to provide those services at the state level. So I think that that's a concern, and as you talk about budget cuts versus revenue-raising measures, we'll try and provide information, trying to collect this. I think that you can see, just if you look at certain pieces of the pie, and don't want to do what other people are doing, depending on what argument you pick the numbers to satisfy that argument. But if you look at, quote, municipal assistance and revenue sharing over the last 4 or 5 years, 85 or 86, those numbers have decreased 31-32%, whereas the overall state operating budget has only decreased 6%. So you can talk about taking those funds easily away you know, to make the budget balance. But don't say at the same time we're not going to increase taxes, because the taxes are going to be increased because those services are needed, especially when you're talking about the ones you're talking about, public protection, transportation. I think that those, no one would quibble that those aren't basic services. Who should be providing them, for what road and what police department, is a question. I think the other issue, again, you may pick two examples, the Juneau and Anchorage one, that may not be applicable across the board. We're also talking about level of service. And the question is, there's a basic protection constitutionally mandated, whatever, in the state to protect the public health, safety, and welfare. And they do that through the trooper system. The question is, over and above that, whether it's down to having block homes or whatever, that people want a higher level of service. And at some point, they make that decision that they want that higher level of service, and are willing to pay more for it than they might get through the state. So, and that varies, of course, across the state. So we welcome the discussion. It's not an easy one, but we're certainly willing to participate. And what we see is as a partner in that, because whatever you folks don't do, we're going to get left holding the bag, either to provide that service or raise the taxes to do so.
Well, Mr. Burgess, I very much appreciate your coming forward to make these remarks. During this first week or two, as our bill load begins to develop, we've held some of these general inquiry kinds of meetings, and I think what this one will lead to is an invitation to all of you who have an interest in this, and to yourself and your colleagues especially, to work with staff of this committee and the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. Hayden and Luann are both represented here and are going to undertake to examine this issue a bit more. The question I would pose to you is this. I think that it is appropriate for service areas to deal with variable types of service, and in, say, the third class borough, where statute requires to be the primary entity where service is delivered or through which service is delivered. But when you have a regular first class city, I guess the thing I'd like to explore with you is what do you think should be the status of powers of that city? Should the powers to, say, plan and zone, give police protection and road maintenance be something that a city can take on as a service area sort of arrangement? Or do you think the essential power to deal with roads, police, and so forth should logically be more area-wide? I guess that's what raised it in our minds, is that here we had one area in one city that had absented itself from a certain sort of service. And it just didn't make a lot of sense to many people that should be the case.
Mr. Chairman,
by the way, I do recognize that there's a need to pay for services which are mandated to political subdivisions, and that need is something that is part of the general revenue problem. And this is not an effort to defer the cost from the state to the city, but to try to organize, as you say, the allocation of those responsibilities in a sensible way.
Let me respond, and I'm shooting from the hip a little bit. Two things. One, I think that through this investigation, analysis, whatever, what we've seen is that because of budget problems, we've seen it at the federal level, and it moves to the state level. The feds say we've got a deficit, we can't deal with this anymore, we'll move it to the state level. Concern is that keeps on going down, and as I said, we're at the end of the line. There is a cost. The service is provided. There's a cost. If there's a zero fiscal note in the state because they're going to give it to the municipalities, the $1 million or whatever it costs to provide that service at the local level doesn't go away because they've shifted it, just as someone else is picking up the tab. I think what needs to be a concern is that you don't just deal with the municipal issue and then the state, because you're ending up with disincentives for incorporation. I mean, if by saying I'm going to become a municipality because I want to take on a higher level of service, and I think that's what you're dealing with here, and it may even be the issue in the Hillside, which I think is where you're going in terms of Anchorage, we're talking about not a service, it's a question of level service, and people provide local government because they want a higher level of service than can be provided by the state, presumably. And it's just a question of level of service. So presumably there was a the troopers did not pull out of Juneau because they took on that power. They were willing to provide some level of service for state responsibilities and overall protection of public health, safety, and welfare. But Juneau wanted a higher level of service than that, and therefore willing to take on that amount. But that we don't provide a disincentive, because you want to become a municipality. In order to do that, you take on this mantle automatically. And the comment that was made as we have these discussions on additional mandatory boroughs that's going on now. There's legislation before you. The people are saying, why would I want to become a municipality? All of a sudden I have to, from taking minutes that no longer weren't required before, minutes, due process issues, to whatever services they're taking on. Senior citizens is a perfect example of a mandate where the state has said, we're going to go in, municipalities, and take some of your money away for this overall important state program, and that is to keep senior citizens in their homes. But we're going to pay you back. But now all of a sudden, municipalities are picking up 60% of that overall state desire from their revenues.
Well, I agree with you. These are things that need to be planned with some care. And I guess the only concern I had was that if aside from requirements that might be put on municipalities, that if a municipality took on a service, that the issue of should it be area-wide or not is really the question I think that's kind of before us. But I won't put you on the spot further on that unless you'd like to be.
Mr. Chairman, one more comment. You are dealing with a unique governmental structure in Alaska, and I, for one, have only been in Alaska for 6 years. I have certainly, my whole value system was not framed in Alaska, and I suspect there are others at this table and certainly in this room that have the same thing. There is a different way of looking at things in Alaska, and I think we have to keep that in mind. When the whole state is not incorporated into a county or a city. So that's the difference, and Representative Martin raised that. And saying Anchorage is a city is not, you may be misleading. It's not a city like Dillingham is a city, or Nome, which is a home rule. It's a unified municipality, and it's a very large municipality. It has rural areas as well as has very urban areas. Juneau even differs to a large degree from Juneau. Most of Juneau is accessible by a limited road system, although the area is much larger. The police that Juneau took over don't go running around up in the Tongass parts of the borough. It goes on a road system, whereas in Anchorage you've got a much larger area. Representative Davis commented on Fairbanks. I mean, Fairbanks is a huge borough. It's the size of the state of New Jersey. And to say that it's going to take on, the borough is going to take on a level of what we say is city police is a little bit misleading, I think.
I hear you. I think it's maybe the question is, should municipal assistance and revenue sharing be tied to the services being provided? Mr. Martin?
Well,
and then Mr. Bloomberg.
I think Mr. Budget, of course, it's his job to do what he's doing, but the phraseology he uses is puts the burden on some rather than on yourself. And I think no matter what state it came from, we all run basic government. And the Constitution, Article 10, might encourage you to read that, goes on basic government, and that the best service of government is local government. And that's what the whole idea is, mandatory local government, so that the people can choose for themselves what kind of services they want to have. And so this is the basis that, you know, there's no doubt people won't perform as local government if someone else to pay the bill. But because the people, and what do you say, the state created, the state didn't create these things. In the Constitutional Convention, the Fairbanks, they were created. And this is what the people said that we would like to have in local government. We didn't have those things in territorial days. So they said, this is what we would have. Instead of county, we're going to have boroughs. We're going to have municipalities in second class and first class cities. So it was intended in those days, because the state government had zero in money, that we, the local people, would do for ourselves what we need. Now, the city, at the same time, Mr. Chairman, do have the opportunity of imposing taxes upon ourselves, but we refuse to do it. So here we come with the idea they want municipal government, wants the state to impose a statewide sales tax so we can give it back to the city. But why not tax itself? You know, the money that's going to be wasted by the time it filters through everything, and then local government gets some of it back. If the people really want services in Anchorage to whatever they may want, either tax yourself through local service areas or sales tax or whatever. And so I think it's a matter of where we're coming from. If we as state legislators feel, philosophically, local government should have the option of serving people the best. And on the other hand, people said, no, we don't want local government. We're going to dissolve if the state has more money. And the municipal government and the city says, hey, Scott, get up there and get more money from them. Although we're not going to get it for ourselves. We want the state to give us more money, but don't you dare tell us how to use it. It's those kind of philosophy that is really basic, and the whole basic, we all swear to uphold the Constitution. That's where I'm coming from.
Mr. Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You phrased it, the issue, in a very interesting way. You said that the issue is what is the level of service to be provided. And I gather from that that you are proceeding from the premise that the state will provide a lower level of service than the municipality. I'm not sure that that's necessarily correct. I would phrase the issue as who should decide? Should it be who should decide what level of service is to be provided in a given geographic area? Should it be the state or should it be the municipality? Because there are two different issues involved in this. Number one is what the level of service is, and number two is who provides it. And they're quite different. And we are not talking about what the level of service is. We're talking about the other issue, who provides it. And it's not just a question of whether there is to be a given level of service. But the question really is, can the residents in a given area, by not taking action themselves, in, let's say, in the Hillsides case, to put that service area within the municipality, can they force the state to provide it? That's the real issue. Who provides it? And can the residents, by taking no action, force the state to provide it? Because they could just as easily, if we had a law that said that the state won't provide it, then they'll take their case to the municipality and they'll say, we want a very low level of protection here. And I think that in a given municipality, that when that municipality has incorporated and has taken on itself police powers, that they have an obligation to provide the police powers in that area. And it may be that in a given service area or geographical area within the municipality, that local politics and the wishes of individual residents dictate that there'll be a very low level of service in that little area. But they are governing themselves, particularly in a home rule sense, when there's a home rule municipality. The state's not in the business of governing that area to any great extent, because they have already, by the establishment of a charter and meeting the requirements of state law, taken to themselves those questions. And I would like you to address the issue in the way I have just phrased it. Why, in a service area within a home rule municipality, should the residents be able by default to dictate that the state provides it? Why shouldn't they hash that out with their own municipal assembly?
Chairman
Burgess.
Scott Burgess.
I think we're talking sort of philosophically here, as rather than just debating everyone's philosophy. But to answer the Representative Gruenberg's specific question, if I can, I think the reason, the simple answer is because it's not a mandated power.
That is a circularity answer.
What he's saying is that given that they've taken on the power, why shouldn't the negotiation of service levels and tax burdens be in the context of the fact that the municipality has undertaken this power? And if they want to have variable levels of service, it's an internal problem within municipal law enforcement. On what basis do they defer that problem to the state for solution by saying to their council, we don't want it? Well, okay, if that's what they're saying, is that what they mean? If what they're saying is we don't want it from you, we want it from the state, Mr. Gruenberg is asking you, doesn't that seem to be taking the discussion out of the municipal arena and somehow deferring it to what, for all intents and purposes, is an outside entity in this particular issue, only because the municipality has elected to assume police powers, period?
Should the local residents be able to put the state in the position of having no choice in the matter? For example, in Spinard, should my people be able to simply say to the municipality, we don't want you to do it, thereby forcing the state into the business of providing police?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that I want to be in the position of defending Hillside. I mean, that's really the issue here. I think we're talking about a very localized and particular or peculiar situation. I guess what I was trying to get at is the broader question of services. I'm not that familiar with Hillside. I know the question, and I guess I was here when Juneau made the decision what to do, and I live in Juneau, and I supported that decision, but that's a personal, individual decision. I think what the only argument I have, which doesn't address yours, and I understand what you're saying, they said, we're going to provide police powers. I mean, we want police powers, we're going to take on that power, but we're going to do it whatever. And I guess it's a real question of the state making a determination of what level of service are they providing in Anchorage versus Juneau that has taken on that power.
No.
Is it
that's
not?
That's what I want to phrase the issue away from that, because the level of service could be high or low. That's irrelevant to the issue. The question is who provides it.
And pays for it.
Well, no, because in one form or another, yes, you're right, dear.
Through what entity is it funded?
Through what entity? Yeah. Because we in the state can't just tax the little service area to provide for their little police protection. Where they can in the municipality, they set the mill rate for the service area. We don't do that at the state level. We don't provide tax bills that differ from service area to service area.
And so, yes, you're right.
Well, Mr. Davis.
Well, these jurisdictional questions are interesting, and I think there are probably going to be a lot more of these as we sort of progress here. But I mean, I've attended a number of fiscal policy meetings, and so I'm sort of thinking in more in terms of overall dollars and cents and how much money that's going to go to the municipal governments from the state level. And, so I suppose those questions are going to come up even more so all the time, given I think there probably will be some reductions to the municipal systems and revenue sharing, and the debate's going to sort of center around that. But Scott, you have to know that we're getting strong messages from the constituents to cut state government, and there's no realization that most, you know, at least a half of this state government that they're talking about is pass-throughs. And so I don't know, we've got a real mission ahead of us to explain to the general public what that means. They when they say state government, they don't realize what it encompasses. But I'm sure we'll be discussing this issue a lot in the next several months.
Thank you very much, Mr. Davis. And Mr. Burgess, we very much appreciate your thought. I believe that what I see coming, you know, is something of a joint venture between finance, CNRA, and this committee, or its staff, to try to look at how we can frame this issue in a way that could lead to solutions. At this point, we've reached about the halfway mark. I'd like to get the Department of Public Safety up. You may wish to remain around, because when the DOT issue comes, you may wish to respond to the same sets of questions from a different perspective. Mr. Gruenberg.
Just a final thing, Mr. Burgess. I have the highest respect for you, and I mean that. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I apologize.
No, it's fine. These are issues that we grapple with too. The only one that I want to get at is that it's not the state outside the municipalities and the city in the municipalities. The state exists.
I don't think that's an issue here. Once the power is assumed by the municipality, how should it? You know, to what extent is the municipality responsible for providing that service area-wide? Is, I guess, what we're getting at is the guts of the issue. And when you get to DOT, I think you'll find it's not a question of defending the hillside. It is the question that you phrased originally. What are the responsibilities? How do they spread themselves out? And through what entity should they be funded? Thank you, sir, very much for your time. Department of Public Safety, Mr. Bischoff, are you the... Oh, Commissioner. Very nice to see you, sir.
Thank you.
Sorry to keep you waiting. I guess I didn't see that you were there.
I'm joined us very much.
Yeah. So are we. If you'd be kind enough to introduce yourself to the record.
My name is
Arthur English, Commissioner of Public Safety.
Welcome, Commissioner. Would you care to freewheel on this a little bit?
No, not really, but...
well, Chairman, in that case, Commissioner, could you speak to the impact on the department of the hillside issue, and maybe you could help us broaden the context. I assume that you probably have similar issues around the state, and maybe you could bring those to the attention of the committee. It's not my intention, I don't believe it's the intention of any member to focus on a particular neighborhood, but rather to look at the problem in its broader sense.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The issue, of course, I'll focus for a second, if I may, on hillside does come up all the time, as we are all aware of. And the public safety's position now is if a police officer is not in an area, I believe it's our responsibility to be there and to provide the level of protection that we can. It doesn't only focus on hillside. We have a number of different areas throughout the state, of course, where we're providing services. There's narcotics operations, there's prisoner transport services, there's investigations that we do jointly with different police departments throughout the state all the time. That's, again, part of our responsibility. If in fact we were to pull out of Hillside, it would definitely free up a number of our troopers to go into other areas and to do other things. Beyond that, unless they have police protection in Hillside, again, I will say I believe it's our responsibility to be there.
Mr. Gruenberg and Mr. Martin.
Just conceptually, if the state were to pass the following type of law, would you have any comments? That Alaska State Trooper Service shall not be provided to organize cities, boroughs, and municipalities which had police powers, say, on January 1, 1999. Unless the state and the local governmental unit enter into a contract which would contain at least the following minimum provisions. Number one, that the state would provide the same level of service provided by the municipal police force, and two, the municipality would pay the actual cost of the service.
And Commissioner, you know, never mind. Go ahead, sir, please.
Representative Gruenberg. I'm also from Spinard, by the way.
Well aware.
Of course, that'd be very hard to answer. The level of service provided by the existing police organization, would we be obligated to provide the same level?
That's not well drafted.
Commissioner, can I maybe it would help. I guess what caught my ear was just the initial phrase in the sense that I assume the state police must provide certain sorts of service, as you indicated, statewide in every area, municipality or not. What we're speaking about here is, and maybe we still have to search out the phrase, the equivalent of city police services. You can differentiate for us what that means, but that's what we're talking about.
Well, it's the Department of Public Safety, our state troopers, are not a municipal police organization. We are a statewide organization, and we don't care if a area is incorporated or not. We are going to take whatever enforcement action we have to, regardless of where it is in the state. And so it really doesn't make any difference to us. However, there are police departments, of course, that are charged with law enforcement in their particular location. That's where we do not become involved, except if they ask us to come and help them, and that's all. It would be awful hard to comment, Representative Gruenberg, on your off the cuff, because I am wrong so much of the time that I'd need to...
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I was trying to think of what other areas do you know within the state that aren't locally incorporated, either second, third, or first class, or municipal, and it is mandated that someone has to give those people protection, which is why someone should do it. But then much of us say Mountain View, we ain't going to pay it. We're the poorest people in the whole state. Well, maybe not as poor as Bethel, but we're poor, in the city of Anchorage. And we can't afford it. So therefore, we're going to talk to our local assembly people and say, we don't want local police protection because we can't afford to pay for it. And we found out that the state is willing to do it. I'd rather have the troopers there, perhaps. I don't know. It's been a long time since we had troopers. And Mountain View had them in Eagle River. They were happy. But I'm reversing this. Probably people say, hey, to heck with any of us.
attaching ourselves voluntarily. Let's go through the two issues.
Mr. Chairman, it's our obligation to go in and provide the service. That's the question. I believe it is our obligation to go in and provide the service if a district that presently has existing police powers and police officers are providing it and they pull out. I haven't heard that happen, by the way. But on occasion now, we have gone into cities that have fired their police department and gone in and provided the police protection for them until they reestablished. And we will do that. Free of charge, quote, I guess.
I think Spinard didn't have local police, did they? Up until about 1970, 69, 70, there was a last section within the city to incorporate. But they depended on the trooper for a long time, too. And maybe they'd like to reverse themselves. Hey, we got commissioner in our district.
Well, let's not advertise it.
Well, that's what I'm doing. what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and the richest people are the ones that have to pay the least.
Well, Commissioner, I think the thrust of all of this is maybe the same as was directed to Mr. Freer. The department, the department's ability to work has to do to an extent to the department's ability to have adequate funding to work. If the scenario that Mr. Martin suggests were to take place, I believe the Department of Public Safety would find itself in a rather compromised situation. It appears that some guidelines are necessary. I regret to say that, but this doesn't seem to be an issue that should be up for free choice every time someone wants to change which group. I mean, what are you going to do if somebody has an unpopular police officer locally and they decide, well, the solution is to just renounce police powers locally and let's bring in the troopers. I don't think as a manager it's going to be very convenient for you to live under that cloud, and I respectfully suggest that it might be useful to chat with your colleagues and folks in the office of the governor and give some thought to which way the administration feels we should go. One way is to open it up and let the as is. The other way is to restrict it more. And I, for one, am rather tend to be somewhat anti-restrictive in my view of public policy, but in terms of some order in the process, I'm not sure there are other means other than guidelines, and we would like the department's recommendation as to guidelines on municipal law enforcement as it affects the Department of Public Safety. Although we do understand that where gaps appear, your excellent troopers are going to fill those gaps, but it's not our intent to create those gaps. And to avoid their creation, I think is something that the Community and Regional Affairs Committee is going to want to look at, and respectfully would suggest they will need some guidance from public safety as to how it impacts your ability to do your general job, given fixed budget numbers or certainly no great windfall of money in the immediate horizon. Are there any other comments you'd like to make at this time? Excuse me, Mr. Davis has a question first.
Well, I have a question related to level of services, and I've been thinking of different examples, which amplify the question, but I guess my concern is what is the level of service, and what kind of criteria do we have for a level of service, and do what I think it was mentioned earlier that is the level of service is uniform. The example that I can think of is a town in my district, Circle, which has a lot of traffic, and for a short amount of time, 5 months of the year, there's a lot of tourists in town, and they really would like to have police protection up there, and the only thing really that's available is a trooper once a week, or for a couple of hours or something like that, and they're interested in getting a BPSO, and I imagine given a lot of the violence that's happened, unfortunately, in the rural areas, that there's probably a greater need for police protection today than there was 5 years ago. So what kind of level of service is the level of service sort of shared equally in the rural areas of the state, or is there some areas that are big gaps and others that enjoy a good level of service? I mean, what kind of, and is there some kind of a level that you're going to be able to say to the legislature, I cannot, that we're going to be violating people's constitutional right for protection of police protection or something? Is there a level of service that you can say that we're meeting? Or I sort of question how we what criteria we have for giving a level of service to the general public. I don't know if I phrased the question there that you can jump into, but I personally see at least one community where the level of service is practically zero, and there's people that are that feel very threatened by that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it's all a hard question to answer. As far as the particular level of service that we provide, there's a number of factors we take into consideration: the location of the area, the population, the remoteness, how hard it is to get in and out of the area, how many troopers we have available in the area to, for instance, to patrol, to outpost patrol. We usually have a circle, as a good example, we have a rural trooper that usually handles that in circle. It's awful hard to measure the have a criteria set all over the state to say we're going to have a trooper in this area because there's so many square miles or so much population. There's so many areas that we are not providing the level of service that we should be providing. We can't provide a level of service because of limited funding and people. But every time we talk now about increasing state employees, all of you here certainly understand the problem there. Well, troopers are state employees, and we can't provide the level of service in circle that we'd like to during the peak time. That happens to be the summertime, for instance, where we were very, very busy with additional activities. So there's no set criteria for when an officer goes into an area, when a trooper goes into an area.
I'm not just talking about troopers, I'm talking about BPSO as well. I mean, there's some villages that have BPSO officers, others do not. So that is another, that's a level of service as well.
Yeah, no, BPSOs, as you understand, are not troopers, are not police officers. They're public safety officers involved in medical, fire, and also police fire. They don't carry firearms. They respond to minor complaints or minor incidents, and then if it becomes a major incident, they call troopers to come in and take it over our system. Normally, that's what happens. Now, yeah, that's how it's supposed to work. In reality, a lot of the areas, it's quite difficult to get in and out of because of weather, for instance, where a BPSO has to be there by himself and handle the thing up until the troopers get there sometimes 2 or 3 days. But I've got to clarify here, too, that we can't misunderstand. A BPSO is no substitute for a trooper. We can't get the impression that if we have a bunch more BPSOs, they can substitute as troopers. That's not correct. We can't do that. They have very limited training. They have they're mostly involved in the area and the abilities that they're in. But they do a very valuable service in the area they're in. It's kind of a hard. I'm not saying I'm opposed to BPSOs. Don't get me wrong. I'm certainly not. It's a terrific program. But again, let's not substitute the two.
Thank you, Commissioner Wright. Mr. Davis, does that conclude your question?
I didn't really answer with that.
I think the question was when you're, and I have another part of the same question. I would ask you when you decide you have to intervene in an area, and the same way you do in Hillside, what level of service needs to be not there, so to speak, for you to go in. That's something we can pursue later. I believe Mr. Davis's question was the opposite. Are you affecting sufficient coverage statewide? If not, where? And if you name an area, what is it that you are not providing there that you're providing other places? In other words, what is your standard to say that you're not doing enough? And are there any areas in which you would say you're unable to do what you need to do? Is that correct?
That variation, that's fine. There's a level of service, and I guess what I'm trying to say is you must have some criteria to say when you come to the legislature, say this is the level of services we're providing, or you know, what difference does it make if we cut your budget 10% because the level of service, you know, it's all sort of vague, so it doesn't really matter whether it just means that the trooper response time goes down by 25% or you know, it seems like there should be a level of service that you as troops, as a public safety are providing. And I know that you're not providing a good level of service to the people I represent, and it, you know, they complain about it all the time. So that criteria I think should be defined so that you can quantify it and say, look, this is what's happening. We cannot, your department cannot sustain any more reduction because of the level of service is such, and it's inadequate. And I know it's a hard question to answer, and I'm not really asking for an answer right now.
Much a question, it's just a recommendation that as we pursue the finance issues associated with public safety, that we do define a minimum level of service and assume that that's what's meant in the Constitution, you know?
Mr. Chairman, there isn't a particular level of service to provide. It's a question you can't answer. You already answered the question yourself because you have had complaints from your constituents that there is no Cooper protection in some of your areas. That's your answer because you don't have people to go into the area to provide the level of service that they should be. But again, it boils down to the same thing. Manpower, Cooper power, and the other thing.
I'll try to close this, Commissioner, but I've listened to some discussion in the past where people where reductions were offered to your division and I don't believe it was you were there, but the commissioner felt like we can live with that, and subsequently we had to then do an increment, a supplement, because it was far below what the level of service that the public demands. And all I'm saying is that in this year we're looking at a possible reduction in what the state government provides to the citizens, that we need to have very quantified what the level of service will be. And there's other jurisdictional questions which we discussed earlier about if there is a reduction to municipalities, what that's going to mean. And I'm just saying I think it's really important that the debate be centered on that, because if the dollar figures are going to translate into levels of service, so it's important that we're ready for those kinds of things.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Mendez, if I may just want to, as you recall, last year I was, when I got here, seems longer than that, much longer than that. The first question that I told the committee for is the level of funding is not adequate to provide any type of level of law enforcement that's necessary at all. We can't do it, period. And that's true. And I certainly realize the problems we're having now. And so, again, it's not going to be up to the department to say we have to maintain this level of service. We already know, every one of you have heard from your constituents the type of service that we're providing now is public safety. And a lot of areas are not very popular. I mean, it's not.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Martin, if you'd help us, just keep it brief, I want to get to DOT.
Well, reversing my back to our major discussion, if the local people want these things, I don't know if Circle's ever had a local election. In Anchorage, just recently in Mountain View, we did get local police and people to go to me. I don't know if my local taxes went up. They did go up, but I don't know if it was for that reason. I do know that we did a much quicker response in Mountain View and South Mountain View, and just happy as can be. So it's not just a matter of what the commissioner of the state that we legislators can appropriate the money, but as long as the local people have thought of, hey, maybe we can have two local police officers and twice and one trooper.
Mr. Groomer,
I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Mr. Burgess. Do you have a feeling, if we phrase the issue in terms of who decides, whether the municipality should decide, and let's focus, say, on the hillside, that type of an example. Or should it be that the state decides the level of service within that service area, assuming once again the same hypothetical I gave him, that under current law, by refusing to opt into the municipal service area, municipal services, the local residents can make the state pay the burden and decide the level of service from that area. Which do you believe is more appropriate in that type of a circumstance? Should we put the citizens in the position of arguing as to the level of service, arguing that issue at the local level, or should we leave them in your lap like it is now?
Chairman,
as a matter of policy, and why?
I can't answer the question, of course. the local residents have let their voice be heard, I think, 2 or 3 times, and we're still there. So I think they have opted to do that. If you're asking...
I'm asking which is the more appropriate as a matter of public policy or not.
Individually, you're asking me to, for my opinion, not the department's opinion.
Respectfully, Mr. Brindley.
Whichever, you just tell me whether it's an individual opinion you're giving or a departmental. I got an answer. You qualify the way you do.
Okay. A personal opinion. Individual opinion, Michael. In Spinard, we opted to accept the Anchorage Police Department as our largest officers. I think the Hillside should do the same thing. I think that should be obligation of the state to provide services.
Commissioner, if the department develops a position on this, and I suggest that you may be asked to develop one, we appreciate your departmental comments at that time. Is that adequate, Mr. Brindley?
It is to call.
Loud and clear.
Thank you, all gentlemen. Thank you, Commissioner, very much. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to make any final comments regarding Department of Public Safety issues on this? In that case, we'll move briefly to DOT during the remaining period of time. The purpose of the DOT portion of the hearing is to dramatize for a moment the fact that this is not just a Hillside issue or a public safety issue, but a general jurisdictional issue as a way of beginning to set the tone for community and regional affairs. Mr. Greenberg, do you have a comment or a question you wish to proceed?
Well,
no. In that case, sir, would you identify yourself for the record, please, and tell us what brings you before us, or if not, we'll ask you questions.
My name is Clyde Stalsters, and I'm a special assistant to the Commissioner of DOT, and I'm here at your request. I'm here to answer any questions you would have.
Thank you very much, sir. We appreciate your coming before us today. The first question I'd like to ask you to lead off is if you could comment on the department's view of the following situation. In unincorporated areas of the state and in incorporated areas lacking road powers, there are numerous roads which the department is asked repeatedly to take on under the state highway system and must turn down for lack of funds and in some cases for lack of justification. At the same time, within numerous municipalities around the state, the department is plowing roads, maintaining roads which are on the state highway system and which don't go anywhere. A dead end. The issue that you've been listening to with regard to public safety is also reflected here. The Department of Transportation is unable to plow roads which no one else can plow, and is plowing roads which municipalities could plow if they were required to or decided they wanted to. I'd stress again that any road that is a connecting road is not a subject of this conversation. It's our assumption that if a road goes between two towns, it's getting plowed. If it's not, I think you should bring that to our attention. But it's those dead-end roads within the municipalities that are getting plowed by DOT and those various sorts of roads outside of municipalities that are not, that brings up the suggestion that there's a conflict that needs to be resolved. Would you care to speak to that issue at all in general or specific terms?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, we spent a great deal of time looking at this issue. It started for us back in our budget preparations for fiscal year FY87, when the department, faced with large budget cuts, presented to the legislature an idea that we would discard or discontinue maintenance on certain roads that we were currently maintaining. I think it is fair to characterize that the response to that was less than positive. We received a great deal of pressure from constituents and from legislators to continue our level of service. In response to that, the governor formed the governor's task force on transportation facilities, and this issue was a central issue that we examined with that task force. The issue is really an issue of equity. It's an issue of efficiency in a large part for the department. It's more efficient for us to do certain tasks than it is to deal with the dead-end road as you've characterized it. One of the experience that we had with the task force, I think, is particularly germane to the topic that you have before you. We The bottom line that we came to was, has already been alluded to here a number of times, and that is that really the issue comes down to who's going to deliver the services and then who's going to pay for the services. So it really gets down to the issue of who's going to tax the people to get these services out on the street. When we put together the task force on transportation facilities, we intentionally heavily skewed the membership of the task force in favor of municipalities. We still came out with, at the end of the process, we still came out with what we think is a very good product. I have copies of it here for those of you who have not seen the report yet, which looks at this issue very closely and has, and in fact, the members of the task force, including the municipal members, came to the conclusion that DOT is in fact providing services in some communities that should be provided by the local communities. And there's a number of reasons that should occur. I don't know if you're interested in that type of a line of thought, because there's other reasons for that to occur other than just the equity issue.
I think we're interested in the line of thought, and we're also anxious, as time runs out, this may be the first of the folks before us who have departmental recommendations. We'd certainly like to have them on the record.
Well, if I might, I'll take the opportunity to pass these.
And I'd go beyond that. If you feel that your recommendations are applicable statewide, even if you have to issue a disclaimer, rather statewide, by that I mean including this jurisdictional issue as it affects other agencies, we would appreciate your general comments, your specific comments, and anything that we can call a departmental recommendation, if anyone would like to look at these or recommendations.
Well, as far as the general application to other areas of governmental service, I think that Representative Martin's comment on Article 10 of the Constitution is particularly interesting, because the issue begins to snowball after you get past one. If you've already created an inequity in one particular situation, i.e. the example of the unincorporated borough versus the incorporated borough, then the issue becomes clouded as you continue through the process. And I think you're getting back to the basics and getting back to the Constitution is particularly interesting in that respect. I wanted to call your attention to, in the report, some of the recommendations that were made and some of the findings that were made by the task force as it relates to this issue. If you'll turn to page 2, you'll notice that in the summary of findings, the task force did find that transportation facilities, the Department of Transportation is providing services that in other communities would be, in this situation of other states, would be provided by local government. And then it goes on to say that the department providing services that would not normally be provided by a state organization causes the department to make decisions that are not focused on the statewide interest. And then also, if you want to go to page 11, you had mentioned before about the diversity or the variation between governmental powers that are within the municipalities. Number 3, task force recommendation number 3 on page 11, there's a printing error there, but you can still make out what it says. The task force recommends that statutes related to local powers for providing transportation services be reviewed and revised so that more uniformity can be achieved.
Just ask you quickly, one of the, just to clarify an issue that came up, I'm beginning to recall that issue of the transfer to municipalities and how it framed itself. I think what made it especially controversial was you were including roads that did go from one place to another, if you will, in that transfer. I recall, and I know Mr. Scribner well, the issue in the city of Cape, where I know I had to advocate for state funds to reimburse the municipal plow, if you will, on the road that goes from the ferry terminal into town, which is clearly, meets the definition of a road which requires state maintenance. Whereas the city streets in the city of Cape didn't come into issue the same way. Maybe John can refresh my memory on just exactly how they did come into issue, but it was clearly a separate kind of a discussion. And so could you just, for us, clarify whether when you were discussing the department's position of turning over roads to the municipality, you were exempting those roads which common sense would place on the state highway system. I see Mr. Scribner nodding. May I say for the record that that is correct, that you're focusing on the so-called local roads rather than transportation corridors and that sort of thing. Is that correct? Thank you, sir.
I'll hand out something here that will, I think, help in this discussion. The discussion that you alluded to, after that discussion, we developed this criteria for determining what roads should be maintained by the state. Now, what you're raising is a debate issue as to whether or not one category or another should be broadened or should be restricted more. One of the things that I discussed with the commissioner before coming out to this hearing was he wanted me to stress that this delineation of state-maintained roads, this policy paper, if you will, that you have before you, is a discussion paper. It's not anything that's hard and fast or set in concrete. So your arguments that you could raise that in one community that doesn't fit is a legitimate argument. We'll accept that argument. If you'll take a look at this document that I provided to you, you'll notice that it's categorized in three categories. One category, the very top category, is those roads that really connect, the main connector roads. And then this number two category is those other roads that we've spent federal highway money on, which we feel need to be in the system to protect our investment in those roads. And then there's those other roads that we have somehow come to maintain over the years for a variety of reasons. And I think those are the roads that you're talking about, the lower category of roads that we picked up for some character for a variety of reasons.
Yes, sir. That's correct. Does that conclude your statement?
Yes, sir.
If I understand it correctly, then the department's position at this time is that those roads which are not, for lack of a precise phrase, logically or upon a finding considered not to be part of the state highway system, but rather our local roads, should in fact be placed under municipal control and maintenance. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Questions, members of the committee? Mr. Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I was wondering, it seems like you've gotten further than some of the other departments in at least trying to delineate the problems of local responsibility and state responsibilities. I hesitate to guess what the answer would be, but it seems to me that local government would be as defensive as possible whenever you dare say you clean up your own roads. Has there been any openness or any try to discuss with any local community that perhaps they should, I like one of the group answers here, that you can take care of those roads much better locally instead of from a statewide office? Has anyone tried to work with you to say that we'll take over these responsibilities?
Well, I think Mr. Scribner would be a good... he will answer that question. But I also, sort of follow-up to that question, part of the task force work, we ended up with a transfer program. Mm. And so if you want to take a look at that...
You still have a well prepared.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Scribner. I'm the Southeast Region Director for the Department. The question that Representative Martin, as I understood it, asked is if we had any discussions with other local governments with regard to this issue on transfer of roads. I've had a lot of discussions with the communities in the Southeast Region. I've taken the position that if we're maintaining a road that by the definitions in these recommendations is more appropriately a local road, that I wouldn't, in the department, wouldn't just unilaterally try to turn those over without some acceptance by the local government or some recognition that there's other revenues coming in to support that, because we recognize that wouldn't be fair to just turn that over and expect them to pick it up. On the other hand, with the budget situation was, it looked like we were getting to the point where we wouldn't be able to maintain those and we'd maybe just have to stop, but that doesn't mean that they would have to be picked up by the local government. I have talked with many of the communities in our region, and they do go the gamut. There are certain municipalities like Juneau, Sitka, that do have their own road capabilities and maintain most all of the roads that they probably should be. Juneau has a few that they probably up for discussion, but Sitka probably maintains most of the ones that it ought to by our definitions here. A community like Ketchikan, the borough, the city takes care of its own, but the borough is an interesting example where they would rather the state do it. When I did bring that up to them, and I have entered into that discussion with them on many times, they're nice about it, but they're very very defensive about it. And I'm nice on my end, but I'm pretty pushy about it. And we've had the discussion in Haines as another example where, as subdivisions have grown out there, in some cases these are sponsored by the state, these subdivisions.
John, you might find it useful. You have a document, or the members have a document in the packet, which does state which roads in the city of Haines are maintaining that are dead-end roads.
Is that one that I sent
yes,
out?
Yes, sir. It's your document, and we have it here for members.
Those are just an example. That's not even an exhaustive list, but it's most of them. And the same discussions are going on there. So they're, as I see it, for the roads that we're currently maintaining that should be local, for as near as I can tell, until something magic happens, we'll probably end up keeping on maintaining them. I don't see us taking on any new ones, though, in that category, because I just don't think it's appropriate for us. So I guess I don't know if that properly answers your question, but that's been my experience here in Southeast.
In a way it does. It's just a matter that, Mr. Burgess said, if the local government wants more and more, I think it hasn't been brought out, that this state treats local government bigger and better than any other state with money. There's a lot of states that give nothing to local government, very little. So it's not that we're stingy and selfish and everything else. There are other things that need to be brought up. Should we, again, reinstate the gross business tax that would repeal and allow the local businesses to local communities to have the authority on local business gross business taxes? That would probably be give and take, so that we would give state revenues in place of helping local businesses to survive. Well, maybe we're at a position now that maybe we should allow that again. If we want this local government to take over these jobs of road maintenance and helping local business and people back and forth in local government, give them the powers that they had before the tax.
Mr. Davis, just for members' benefit, it's 20 minutes of free. They take Mr. Davis's question, ask Mr. Burgess if he wishes to respond briefly. Then I'm going to ask the committee if you have any recommendations for action. I'd like to get a volunteer to join me in Community and Regional Affairs to present this data to that committee at a time convenient to their committee. And that'll pretty much wrap us up on our overviews and general discussions. As of the beginning of next week, when Mr. Grunberg will be chairing, we're going to get down to bills, and it's going to be pretty steady from there on. Mr. Davis.
I just wanted to say that the subcommittee, anybody has no problem, the subcommittee on the cases to meet at, let's say, 1:15 on Friday. And
so
anybody who's interested
parties on the Attorney General's opinions affecting Alaska statutes that we discussed a couple days ago, Mr. Grunberg will be.
And my staff will contact you. There's time we may deal with that uniform.
Sounds good. Mr. Davis.
I'd like to join you in that, in those deliberations.
Sure.
All members of the committee will be advised of the meetings of any of these subcommittees.
Yes.
And Kathy, could you make sure that please with Hayden that takes place?
Mr. Davis,
did you have a question or something of the DOT?
I'm still stunned. I thought I heard Representative Martin, an advocate of new taxes.
would you care to restate that?
It used to be a grass tax and head tax, now it's something else. I thought that it might only be fair if Mr. Burgess and someone else look into what local authority were repealed in tax laws, and I know the gross business was one of them, and so since we're getting into this fight of local revenue sharing, that perhaps the committee can look into what laws were repealed that allowed them to have more local taxes. Would that be fair, sir?
Mr. Davis.
Well,
I've had some discussions with your department related to this transportation study, and it would be my guess that some parts of your recommendations are going to be implemented this year just because of the way that the discussions that I've been a part of, you know, in terms of reduction in overall state government. But I think part of your stance about not taking out any new roads, which I can understand it given you have not been given any money, but there is certain areas, and I think Representative Gall probably mentioned it, that you really do need to be providing. So I think perhaps maybe the positive part of any reductions to the department will be that there'll be a little better criteria as far as what kind of services you do provide and who gets the services. I'm saying that knowing that I've got a number of roads that are maintained by the computer department in my district. But I appreciate the participation today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Gentlemen, do you have any concluding comments?
Yeah, I wanted to qualify one thing that you had asked me about, whether or not the department's position was that the roads category 2B and 3 roads should be maintained by local government. I responded affirmatively.
Actually, I did caution myself not to phrase it that way. Without having reviewed this in depth, my question was phrased, roads which are considered local roads, and I'm not sure that I know where that exactly falls, certainly category 3, and I don't know if I would support that definition for every road in category 3, but the thrust of the question was, you want to see a change of the status quo to put more responsibility for local road maintenance on municipalities and more on the transportation corridors in the areas outside municipalities for the department.
And I answered that in affirmative, and that's a true statement. The one other caveat that I would add to that is I think that has to be done in an orderly fashion. You can't just piecemeal do that or do that in a way so as to just throw the trauma on somebody else. Mm-hmm. It has to be done in an orderly fashion, and the model transfer program that the task force worked up is one method to do that.
Well, speaking without portfolio on behalf of the municipalities of the state, I know they will appreciate that attitude on the part of the department very much. Thank you, gentlemen, sir, very much. Ms. Burgess, you want to do a quick one?
I will try and be brief. Scott Burgess, the last commissioner, again. One, let me go back to Representative Davis's comment about municipalities will see more cuts. We'll see cuts this year. I think the qualifier of more, because as I mentioned, they've already received those cuts, and that 43% or 53% that's been thrown around as part of the budget that is passed through, I think it needs to be clear that those aren't all municipal programs. We're talking longevity-based.
I'm stretching the jurisdiction of the committee on this whole issue, but I don't think municipal assistance and revenue sharing is something we can really pursue at this point.
So. Okay, well, I'm just saying that funds to municipalities go to provide services, and it's just a question of where the money's coming from and where the services are being provided. On the transportation issue specifically, one, the question is, from Representative Martin, did the municipalities help out? I mean, the task force was municipalities, and we certainly appreciate the commissioner's effort to come to municipalities and say, let's work on this, rather than just coming in with legislation, which happened. I mean, the budget just came in and said, we're just going to cut 20% across the board, transfer. You know, that's the kind of problem that we would like to try and avoid. You need to approach this with some systematic fashion. So we appreciate that, and we were involved. And, you know, you have the recommendations in front of you. There are situations where there are mutual agreements, however, and I don't know that the department really mentioned that, where in fact municipalities are maintaining state roads where it makes sense.
Right.
And so I think that there's a trade-off, and that's important. I think we need to look at the revenue source, the gas tax, and I think Representative Davis referred to that, not specifically, but the fact there are some issues because gas tax was part of the recommendation. That is a revenue source to provide roads, and the question is, right now it goes to the general fund, it's not dedicated to maintenance or roads specifically, and it certainly isn't dedicated to all roads in the sense that because, as you've indicated, there are local roads and state roads, however, presumably the money needs to come to make those roads happen, and perhaps, as in other states, and the question by Representative Martin, that we do something in Alaska that other states don't, also other states share that portion of that gas tax with municipalities for the improvement of those roads. There is federal fund involvement here, and I don't think we should avoid that. Many of these roads are built to federal standards, and therefore there's a reason for the state being involved in that road. And the only last comment that I'd make, and I guess it's a focus issue, by the way, I've got a different with you there, just because we, you know, save the state 90% of the money in building roads doesn't mean to me that the DOT has a responsibility to maintain them. No, all I'm saying is that those roads are built to a federal standard, and therefore it's a significant maintenance issue in terms of that road.
What's the issue?
Pardon?
What's the issue?
That's my
I don't follow that. It's easier to plow than a little, you know, local road, so I don't get it.
Well, it may not be need to plow if it's not a state, I mean, a federal standard road. I think that gets into your qualification of what's a state road versus a local road in terms of the federal standard.
Is all I'm doing. You mean that the fact that the federal government indicated an interest in that road needs to be considered in determining who is really the beneficiary of that road.
Right, and I think that's part of the criteria in terms of the state in your recommendations. Where the road came from. In other words, the state has to maintain a certain responsibility.
No, I don't know that. The state can maintain its responsibility by delegating those responsibilities like education to its political subdivisions. I've never heard that the state through DOT assumed a responsibility by accepting federal funds for a road, but forgive me, that's a side issue. Go ahead, sir.
And the only other one is, and back to so where we started from, is that what you've seen is some recommendations for one piece of the pie.
Right.
And that I think that if we can focus this discussion, however it comes, you say you make a presentation to CNRA, it is one issue, transportation. You've raised three at least today, and there are a variety of, we haven't talked about education and, you know, a variety of other sources, and that if we can focus this some way, and I don't know how to do that. One suggestion has been, as has happened in the federal level, a federal commission on intergovernmental relations to try and work these things out. Some states have taken on that mantle. As we've dealt with the Title 29, the chairman's certainly familiar with a resolution of the legislature to put together a task force to look at this kind of thing so that we focus in on this, because as you said, as of next week or tomorrow, you're going to start on bills, and all of a sudden this issue gets pushed aside, and of course we're going to be following bills in this committee and the variety of others that
sure
at the time.
Well, Scott, the drill is going to be that we're going to summarize what we've heard today in very brief terms. I'm going to invite members of the committee to join me. We'll go over to CNRA and make a brief presentation, offer our services to work with them on the matter, and invite all of you to work with that committee towards resolution of this issue. I'm not going to let it drop myself by any means. I think it's essential that we resolve the jurisdictional questions. Thank you very much, sir and gentlemen. Mr. Freer, did you develop, or were you able to develop, any kind of a comment from the department on this?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Would you care to state it? We're running out of time, but I do definitely want to get your thoughts on the record, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, this is Peter Freer from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs.
Excuse me, sir. Just for purposes of the record, would you insert these remarks, Kathy, in Mr. Freer's...